Blog Talk Radio.
It's 1 p.m. Central, 2 p.m. Eastern Time. And it's time now for Namaste Nutrition with Claudia Cleary. Be happy, be healthy, be complete in body, mind, spirit. Claudia's advice is always uplifting and inspirational. Get joyfully motivated every week with Namaste Nutrition. And now, here's Claudia.
Good afternoon. This is Claudia Cleary with Namaste Nutrition. Today we have a guest with us, Cindy Walsh, who is a mom of autistic twin boys. And I would like to give you a little bit of information about Cindy. She is quite a remarkable woman. She found out very, very early in her twins' lives that they had autism, and she has done so much in order to make their lives better and to help enhance their quality of life. Cindy, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you. Glad to be here.
I'm so glad that you are. You have two boys. They're identical twins, Robbie and Eric, and now they're 10 years old. Can you talk a little bit about what your experiences have been like with Robbie and Eric when they were first diagnosed? What exactly happened with their diagnosis, and what was the prognosis the doctors gave you?
Well, in the beginning, with a lot of kids, is that there are other, I don't know if I mentioned this in your other program, but there are a lot of underlying medical issues, and that we need to figure those out and rule those out before you can officially say that it's definitely autism, even though I had my husband's uncle had come, who coincidentally, maybe it's not coincidentally, but he was having to go to a conference on autism. He's a doctor in Guam, and he was coming to do a conference in Washington, D.C. It was near me, and he came back and said that he thought that they were on the spectrum. And my mother had also said that. She's not a doctor. But we didn't get the diagnosis until they were four because they were sick a lot. They had scarlet fever, bronchitis. We were using a nebulizer. We had to buy it because we were using it so often. And then Robbie had his tubes out, adenoids, and tonsils taken out. And it was kind of a, not really a botched surgery, but they hit his jugular vein, and he almost died. His blood started gushing from his ear. But at the same time, he was kicked out of a preschool saying that he was autistic and that he had failed some hearing tests. And I said, I'm not giving him a hearing test with a bunch of foam and a huge bandage on his ear. I'm going to wait for it to heal. They also said it could have been a tumor. He could be deaf. He's not answering to his name because they're twins, and they get called the wrong name all the time. They get called Buddy and Fella and stuff. So we had to wait a whole year of this to figure out what was going on. And then finally, after age four, you know, by the time they were officially diagnosed, we knew that they were autistic. That situation is extremely rare. There are a lot of people that have autistic kids with other sort of medical conditions, and you need to rule those out before you can definitely say autism. And the thing about being deaf, that's a clue that gets overlooked because you know, they usually say that the first sign is not answering to your name. Well, you know, that would be a good reason. So when they had their hearing test, they said it was inconclusive because they were on the spectrum. They couldn't follow directions. So they said that when you hear the tone, to put the block in the cup. And so it was taking him a while, but he was putting it in the cup, but it was at the wrong time, so they weren't really sure what was going on, and we finally had to have a test like they do for babies to bounce the sound off of his eardrum when he's unconscious to see if he could hear or not, and he could. So that's a long story, but that's how they ended up being diagnosed,
I think it's interesting and very important to let people know that this is the journey that you took, because for other moms and dads out there of young children who have children that they're not sure about whether there is a problem, it's important for them to hear and understand what you experienced, so that if they're going through something similar, they understand the process. And then that way they don't feel quite as isolated as you probably did when you were going through it too. Wouldn't you agree?
Oh, yeah. You're very isolated. You just feel like your parents who aren't going through this, they don't get it, and you just don't know what to do and you don't know where to turn. And also because even if when you talk to other parents of autistic kids, even they are different. And that's what I had found, was that I had identical twins, and when they say that it's genetic, they were very different from each other. So that didn't work with me. And when they'll say, look for autism in your family, like, they're more alike than anyone in my family. Tell me why they're different. And they don't have an answer for that.
Of course. Of course. Yeah. And it's interesting because, you know, you see autism, or just any twin set, whether they're genetically identical or not, you know, there are certain tendencies that you see that would be typical for family traits. But also you see plenty of differences, even with genetically identical twins, who are healthy. You know, one kid might be really more sports oriented and the other one might be more musically oriented. And so it's interesting that you've had this experience with your boys. Let's go to some of the questions that we discussed before. You know a lot about nutrition and autism. And can you please tell me why some kids are such picky eaters when it comes to, you know, autistic tendencies?
Well, you know, for instance, when I was talking about the tonsillectomy, my son had sleep apnea, that's why we did it, and that a lot of kids have physical problems with their throat, with their tongue, with their esophagus, that not eating or being picky when they eat could actually be a self-medicating issue, that eating causes pain, so therefore they won't do it. So, you know, getting yourself tested, a lot of kids end up with getting a pill cam, an endoscopy, to figure out what's going on. Are their intestines inflamed? Is there some other issue? Do they have celiac? Some kids, it's a texture issue. Like, for example, my kids would only eat food when it was cold. They didn't like hot food, so I had to cook it and then cool it back down. I put it in the fridge for a couple minutes till it was lukewarm, and it's like, how can you eat lukewarm soup? But that's what they ate.
Yeah.
So, you know, you got to do what you got to do, and they eat it that way.
Absolutely, and I think even parents of healthy children who have children who are picky eaters have to figure out what the solution is for their children's, you know, their taste, the texture, whether it's a taste or a texture thing. My daughter is ADHD, and, you know, she doesn't have, you know, what your children have by any stretch, but she does have texture sensitivities, and when she was younger, she didn't like soup. I would make soup for her. She never liked it until I pureed it and got it consistent, totally homogenous. And once I did that, she would eat it. But if I gave her a soup with all kinds of different stuff in it, she wouldn't touch it at all. Even noodle soup, she didn't like it at all. And, you know, it's a common problem, I think, with kids across the board. You know, so when you have kids who have autism, you know, figuring out, number one, what their sensitivities are and also what their inclinations are, it's really, really critically important.
It is.
So what are the other medical issues that go along with picky eating? Can you describe some of those?
Well, there's also a lot of kids are on several different diets, you know, and I can go over them, and sometimes the kids are on more than one. Some kids have allergies. They, if you have a problem with gluten and casein, gluten is the protein in wheat, and casein is the protein in milk, that if they have a problem, there's a theory called the opiate theory, that the food is making them get a feeling of being high. So they're eating the food waiting to get the high, so that when you're going on the gluten and casein-free diet, they're not getting the high from the food, so then they don't want to eat it anymore. And that these kids are the only thing that they want to eat. It's like macaroni and cheese or pizza, you know, but you just think, oh, those are just typical foods, but they're getting, you know, and then the kid's like allergic to eggs or something like that too. They're getting all their foods that are making them high from the same food. So, of course, they're going to eat that.
Absolutely.
Yeah, well, there's more diets. There's a low oxalate diet. Oxalates are in certain foods. There's also the Feingold diet, which is really good for a kid who's higher on the spectrum. ADHD is really good for everyone. But the Feingold diet is about taking out artificial colors and flavors and sugars because the artificial colors are made from crude oil, so they're not technically not even really food. So, you know, you shouldn't eat crude oil.
No. Well, it's not like petroleum jelly. I mean, a lot of people don't realize petroleum jelly, which is something that you find in just about every medicine cabinet for, you know, moisturizing or for lubrication. It's made from petroleum.
Yeah, exactly.
And, you know, there are better alternatives to that. You know, I'd rather have something that's a food grade, something to rub into and use for lubrication or use for soothing any kind of dry skin. Coconut oil is a great solution for something like that. And a lot of people don't realize that, you know, you put something like petroleum products on your body, and you can find it also in lip balms as well. It's everywhere. And it can cause all kinds of complications.
Something simple that, you can do is just really simple. It's just to look at your labels. Google what's in your food. You would be really surprised at some of these things that's in your food that, would even be allowed to be in your food and why, whose idea was this anyway. Like, I'll give you an example, not to be gross, but be gross is that... In Starbucks,
you can be okay, we're talking about that's one of the things that people have to get used to. Is that sometimes there are topics that come up that aren't the most appealing, but at the same time, it does need to be brought out to the forefront. Go ahead.
Yep. Starbucks strawberry drink, the red in the strawberry was made from beetles. So
Look at people hear that. It's sort of like what Jamie Oliver has done with some of the shows that he's done on the exposing of some of the foods that people eat and the reasons why we have such problems in our country with health issues that are so chronic and obesity. Okay, that's the big one right now.
Yeah, exactly. There's one that he mentioned, which is beaver glands are in ice cream.
Mm-hmm.
That's a nice one, too. Like, who would think of putting in glands of a beaver in ice cream, but it's in there? You know, but of course, that's not what they're going to call it. You know, you have to do your research and figure out what exactly you're eating, and the less ingredients there are, the better. You know, they deceive you in that sense that there's 50 names for MSG, and there's, you know, they used to tell you that we're looking for sugar to see if it's one of the first four ingredients, but they'll put, you know, cane sugar is one, and beet sugar is another, and it's all just sugar.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah,
it's the whole package.
Yeah, and I mean, one of the things a lot of people, I think, don't realize is how addictive sugar truly can be.
Oh, yeah.
Example, I remember my daughter when she was much younger. She was probably third or maybe fourth grade top. But she went to a birthday party with a group of other kids from her school. And the children at her school are all like her in that they all have learning disabilities, mild to moderate. They're all very high-functioning, really smart kids. They're all average to above-average intelligence. But because they don't learn the same way, they need a different method of teaching to them in order to maximize what they can be and what they can do. But the one thing that really blew my mind was this was a rope. It was like a rock climbing party. So the kids had a great time climbing on these ropes and all over this rocky area that they had set aside for the kids for the party and everything like that. The cake and the ice cream was served, and it was like you flipped the switch. Every single one of them started acting out and acting up. It was unbelievable, but it was so glaringly obvious about what was going on with these kids and the effect that flour and sugar from the cake had on them and how they functioned. And, you know, it just sort of reinforced to me exactly why you have to really be judicious in what you give your kids and how you feed them in order to help them learn the best way possible. I mean, the school where my daughter goes does a great job. There are certain things about the food that they choose to give them that I would love to see changed. But that being the case, you know, you work with what you can and, you know, you leave the rest. Now, in your case, with autistic children, you know, you can't give them sugar or white flour. So how do you handle things like a birthday party when they're invited?
You bring your own food and they eat before they go. I want to also mention why sugar is a trigger for hyperactivity.
Mm-hmm.
Is that the ADHD kids, the high-functioning, the low-functioning, a lot of them have a candida issue. You know, usually you think of yeast infection as in the genital area, but it actually begins in the intestines, and it travels to other places. But it's the intestinal area needs a balance of bacteria and yeast. And kids that have too many antibiotics or they eat a lot of sugar. Sugar feeds the yeast. So to kill the yeast, then you need an antifungal, and you would also need to eat, take out all the sugar, including fruit, honey, everything, until the yeast is gone. And the yeast is like a complete change in their personality. And that was one of the triggers that I noticed that started me on this whole thing, was because when Robbie eats sugar, he's angry. He's angry, he's defiant, and then he falls asleep. And then he doesn't want to do things because he's too tired. Eric is kind of an OCD, and he doesn't want to follow rules. So their behavior was different on the sugar. And I was like, why does sugar react so differently? And then when I did the yeast diet too, which was very, very hard, and it was just making me fall asleep. And why I had the chronic fatigue and that I had energy was the best, that was the best way, you know, I lost a lot of weight by doing that because I could not stop eating the sugar, and I didn't want to do the candida diet because I craved the sugar so badly because I had a yeast problem too. And I thought the only way that they're going to get rid of it is for me to get rid of it. So we all did it at once, which was horrible, but it was good at the end.
how long did it take you to detox from the candida before you started to see a response and results for your own health?
Well, think about autism as there isn't going to be one thing that you're just going to wake up and automatically be better. It's going to be like steps. You improve and then level off and improve and level off. And it's one thing, the candida, that you have to be careful of is that if your child has the heavy metals in their system, it feeds the yeast so that you end up having to tackle both of them at the same time. And on top of that, the liver has to be healthy because taking the antifungals, depending on which one, there's natural ones and there's medication and there's lots of different ways. You can homeopathy, you can do it in lots of different ways, but your liver needs to be strong enough to handle it, and the way we did it was with medication. My doctor is an alternative and natural, so you know, the best way that he knows is with medication, so that's what we did. But we took a lot of breaks. You know, he would try one kind, and then we would take a break, and then, well, we were still sugar-free, and then we would take a liver test, a blood test, and then we would do a different one, and then we'd take another break and another test, and we'd do a different one until it was all gone, you know, because
wow.
it makes sense to do the simplest, easiest ones first. You
don't
have to do any of the more expensive kinds. Though I found several things that later that could have done it a little bit easier than the way we did it, but it worked, so, you know, I'm happy with it. Go ahead.
Yeah, I'm sure that you are. So, you know, I mean, just to give anybody who's listening and is interested in trying this kind of a process for themselves, how long did it take you? Do you remember how long it roughly took you to go through the liver and the liver detoxing and the detoxing?
There were several years. And then also, you know, a mistake that I made was that we had cleared the candida after maybe 2 years, and then I was just kind of, even though we were giving them natural candy, I was giving them candy just like little by little. It was slowly over a year they started to have those behaviors come back. And then I just came home one day and I just, the sugar's all gone. We're starting over. So basically I did it twice.
The
second time,
sometimes you have to do things more than once before you start to realize the impact that it can have on you. And that's actually a good thing because it sort of reinforces why you chose to do it in the first place, right?
Exactly. I needed to hear that because I'd heard a lot of kids, you know, that they outgrow allergies, they can start eating some of those foods again. But what was interesting was that we were giving them a bunch of supplements, and I had decided to stop the supplements, and I was trying to see if I could do it for a month. But Eric made it, and Robbie didn't. Eric doesn't really need the supplements. He's only getting a few to help with his height, like Zizia, but, you know, he can give or take, and he doesn't really need anything. He's a little bit short, but Robbie needed everything. We had to bring everything back, and we had to go a full course of antifungals, and now he's doing much better. But just because they're identical twins doesn't mean that they need to be treated the same, because a lot of doctors use a sibling protocol, and they treat one, and they do the same for both. But that helps sometimes, but not all the time.
Yeah, it makes total sense that you would say that. I think people have to be treated as individuals. you know, you said that they're identical, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. And didn't you say one is short and the other one is not?
Well, that sometimes they're the same. They kind of catch up there, and then they went, and Eric is usually a little bit shorter, but sometimes he's not.
Yeah,
so,
and the point that I'm trying to make is
really.
they're growing at different rates, but they're growing doing what is right for each of them at a given moment in time. So it would make sense that they have to be treated as individuals instead of being treated as if they are the same person. It's one of those things where, you know, you can't take two kids and just sort of lump them together. It's something that I think a lot of parents try to do in some cases. And, you know, they're doing the best they can, God love them, but still, looking at kids as individuals, I think, will end up yielding the best results. And obviously, you found the right answer for your children. Going back to the questions here that I have for you, can you talk a little bit about, you know, the sameness in the routine of autism and why that's so critically important for them?
For a routine?
Yeah.
Well, a lot of kids, the OCD behavior could be caused by yeast. It could be from something called PANDAS, which is basically
mm-hmm.
strep in the brain. So they like to keep things the same. They like to keep their routine. And so sometimes people think they would do that in terms of behavior. Like one teacher in first grade had said that we're going to try to keep them as a – I kind of took advantage of it because he said, well, we'll get them used to change. And maybe it's kind of mean, but, I mean, it worked. Because we would, like, put them in a different seat at the table and put them in a different chair in the car and take a different route to go somewhere. Or, because my house goes in a circle, it doesn't really matter, but the GPS says to go one way, so that's the way they want to go. So we were constantly changing what we were doing. And because I knew they were always repeating, they weren't having a conversation, they were repeating what we said. So I would say change will make you stronger. And, you know, being autistic, they took that literally and said, I don't have any muscles, you know. So, like I said, change will make you smarter. I'm not any smarter. And then I'll say something that they said was smart. Oh, yeah, I am smarter. So,
you know what I love is
yeah.
how you have taken your kids and you have learned as much as you possibly could about autism and about what the triggers are for it and really done the very best that you could with what you have learned. So let's talk a little bit about the allergy aspect of it because, you know, you said that in a lot of cases kids get allergies such as eczema, rashes, and flu-like symptoms. It's not just food exposures that actually give them these allergenic-type symptoms. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Okay. Well, there's a lot of reasons for the eczema. There could be a skin allergy. I have seen a few kids with dermatitis that it did end up coming from food, but some kids are it's environmental. Some kids it's
mm-hmm.
both. Some kids it could be not just like you're allergic to mold or pollen or something. Some kids it's your soap or your shampoo or your toothpaste that they're reacting to. So they don't want to wash because it's giving them a rash. But for
mm-hmm.
example, Eric had a, I think it was Eric, he had a rash that went from the end of his sleeve down his arm, and it looked like measles. And so I took him to the doctor, and they said, it looked like measles. And they said, well, if it was measles, it would be in the stomach. And it was nothing on the stomach. It was exactly a line across the end of his shirt. And she said, have you been giving him suntan lotion? And it was exactly the line of where you would put suntan lotion if he was wearing a T-shirt. It was banana boat suntan lotion. I'm not sure what's in that, but I don't use it anymore.
So, I don't understand why.
Yeah, so you know, knowing your ingredients and going through, I usually tell the parents to, when they have a meltdown and they have a rash, what were they doing? What were they seeing, smelling, touching? You know, if your child has a tantrum outside, comes inside and they're better, what's outside that could be causing that? If they're inside,
mm-hmm.
what's inside that could be causing that? There's a good doctor, Dr. Doris Rapp, that she's been talking about this since the 80s. You know, she was way, way ahead of her time, but she talks about toxins in the school, and she talks about what did they hear, smell, or touch. That's her thing of Is there stainmaster on the carpet? Is there antimony on from the furniture? You know, there's a lot of stuff that could be environmental that you would need to take into consideration. Now, you know, of course, that's not true for every kid, but like my son Robbie reacts to chlorine, and he was autistic around the chlorine, and then he had a he was doing really well, and the one time we put him in soccer in a field that had astroturf, and there was like little green specks, you know, all over his clothes and his hair and everything, and he just went with another team, like he wasn't focused at all, and he wasn't able to do anything on that field. And I was like, what the heck's in astroturf? And I emailed my doctor, like, is there something in astroturf? And his wife answers the emails, and she said there's like 3,000 chemicals in there. It could be a number of things. And I thought, well, I can't put him in practice when he's in the astroturf because it's just too toxic. I had to detox him in a pool. I'd rather put him in, like, a saltwater pool because that's much better. But there's a lot of kids that, you know, you don't think you can die from autism, but a lot of kids drown. You know, so it was important that they learn how to swim, and I just would have to detox him and take him in an outdoor versus an indoor pool would be less toxic. So, you know, you have to kind of get him to swim enough that, that he can, that he's going to be okay, but also keep the toxins out.
And you've talked before also about, you know, one of the methods that you use to help, you know, clean them off and detox them, and you did it outside in a kiddie pool. Is that right? Can you talk a little bit about that?
Well, there's one way that, that you can detox. It's mud. It's clay, bentonite clay. It's very messy, but it's detoxing through the skin, and so it has trouble going down the drain. So you have to block the drain if you're gonna do it inside, and you have to completely wipe down everything. But it's a safe way of detoxing. To the skin, and I mean, I did it in a baby pool just so I could dump the water out because it was easier, letting them play in the mud. And since they had trouble with skin sensitivities, it was like a twofer, you know, because they would get them used to having things on their hands, and it was also detoxing them. So, you know, there's a timer, I think, on that of how long, depending on the kid's age, that they should be in there. You know, and of course, you need to clean them up.
Yeah, the one good thing about something like bentonite clay that I think the listening audience needs to hear also is that it's completely harmless to the environment as well as a really good detoxing agent for a child's skin. And it's actually kind of fun to do something like that when it's nice outside. Yeah, and thanks so much for talking about that because I don't think a lot of people realize that, you know, you can end up pulling stuff, toxic ingredients and toxic chemicals out from the inside of your body through your skin. But it does work as the biggest detoxing and protective agent. It's the biggest organ in the body, and detoxing the skin is critically important because sometimes you just, well, with children, you can't do a dietary detox. They're too young. But you can definitely use something like bentonite. So let's talk a little bit some more. Let me see a couple of these other questions that I have here. Can you talk a little bit about vaccines? Because I know you have a very strong opinion about them, and I also know that it's a very controversial topic for a lot of people because a lot of people think that flu shots are critical every year. A lot of people think that if you don't get the full course of all the shots and immunizations for your children, that you're doing them a huge disservice. Can you talk about the flip side of that, please?
Well, you know, when you look at vaccines, I mean, you've got to give it a question. You know, you need to go to the doctor with I know what's in the vaccine, I read the insert, not find out afterwards like I did. And when they just give you this little thing that says, take some Tylenol and go home. Tylenol lowers your glutathione level. Glutathione is an enzyme that helps you to detox. So a kid that has that may react from a vaccine might have a lower glutathione already, and then you give them the Tylenol and they're lower still, which is why some kids would react and some kids wouldn't because of their glutathione level, but the doctor's not going to check that. The doctor won't even let you take them home from the hospital for without getting the hepatitis B shot, which the hepatitis B shot you can only get from drugs or sex, so why they're giving it to a newborn baby is beyond me. You know, the flu shot, look at the flu shot. That they say there's 36,000 people that die from the flu every year. Well, they say every year. Every year means that the flu shot didn't work. If the number would go down if it was actually working, it's not working. So the number's the same. So I have a friend that almost died from a flu shot. And what was interesting about her was that she started to buy, like, V-neck shirts. Like, she thought the world was going to run out. She called it, like, Barbie feet. She was walking on her toes. Her symptoms sounded like autism. So she had neurological and muscle damage and nerve damage. She had nerve damage in her feet and nerve damage that she couldn't walk. She was in a wheelchair. And she was walking 5 miles a day before she had flu shots. She was very healthy. And her story sounded so much like she got autism from a flu shot. You can't suddenly get autism when you're 37. You know, it doesn't make sense. So I'm putting her story in my book so people will see the similarities between her story. Her name's Lisa Mark Smith. Between her story and what people are going through that have a kid on the spectrum, that you would see the damage. You know, you need to see when you're getting the flu shot, which shot it is, and why you need it, and is it even valid for that age? Because in some level, on some shots, if you reach a certain age, it's more dangerous as a child. There are some shots that are more dangerous as an adult. So all the shot does is prolong it so that you get another disease as an adult, like chickenpox.
It's so interesting. Right, exactly. Yeah. Chickenpox is something that you can contract when you're young, and it doesn't have the same effect on you as it does if you were an adult.
Right.
Yeah, there's so many questions that I have for you. You know, the influenza outbreak back in the early teens of the 19th century was devastating to the people across the globe, especially I think it was in Europe, although to some extent in the United States too. And there are immunologists in the Center for Disease Control that's talking about that we are due for another pandemic, that sort of a thing. And, you know, you have done a ton of research about immunization. Can you speak at all on how that could potentially impact people's approach to immunization, just from your own research?
That's kind of a scare tactic, you know, because the swine flu, for example, there was all the hype about swine flu, and you're going to die from the swine flu, and that people didn't quite do it on time. They would know someone who had the swine flu, and it wasn't fun, but they didn't die. And so then they didn't take it, so they thought it was just hype, which it was, because a lot of people had got sick. They didn't go to the doctor, and the doctor said, oh, you have swine flu, without ever having seen them, because they were just assuming. And then they called it flu-like symptoms, which could be the flu or could not. They have no idea because they never saw you. So so they could fluff up the numbers in some cases. So just because there's an epidemic, if you build up your immune system, you'll be okay.
Mm-hmm.
If your immune system can handle it, and you can take supplements, there's a lot of things that you can do. I'll give you an example. In Young Living, there's an oil called Thieves Oil, and the Thieves Oil, the story was that there was the Spanish flu, and there were thieves that were coming in and stealing from people who were dead. And they thought, how are you alive? You've been exposed to all these people. You're not dead. And they were using these oils. And so instead of punishing them, they were wanted to stay alive too, and they were also using the oil. So it's like cinnamon and clove and a bunch of other kinds of oils. And I mean, I would much rather use Cleaves oil. It would be much more effective. There's a I had just seen something the other day of using there was like four different kinds of oil that they said that you could. There was a new case of pertussis that was coming out, and he said that we'd get rid of it in 24 to 48 hours of using these oils when the antibiotics that people were using weren't working. So just to know that there are alternatives out there, there are other things that you can do that will keep you from getting sick.
Yeah, I work with a line of products called Isotonics, and antioxidants will boost your immunity as well. So you have the oils that will work on the outside. And the isotonic products that are the same pH or same, that's what isotonic means, same pH or same pressure as your blood, your sweat, or your tears. It's basically absorbed within 5 to 10 minutes. And the cool thing is it tastes like juice. And the nice thing is that they have products that are designed to help with children who have autism. Because the only reason I'm mentioning this is because there are alternatives. And it's just like you said, it's a question of people doing their own research and figuring out what alternative works best for them at a given moment in time. and they are extremely effective. I've done some amazing things for myself and for my daughter with the isotonic products that I work with. I would love to continue this conversation, but we are going to take a short break. And when we return, Cindy, I hope you'll hang on so that we can talk some more with you. You're always fascinating to talk to.
Okay.
And thank you so much.
All right.
Okay, so the information about Cindy, if you have any questions for her, I would just like to give Cindy's email. It's twinmom, T-W-I-N-M-O-M, 4321 at cox.net. That's twinmom4321 at cox.net. If you'd like to email her if you have questions. And if you'd like to get a hold of me, I am Claudia Cleary. That's claudia.cleary at yahoo.com. And I hope that you will be happy to contact us if you do have any questions about anything. And we will be returning on GGM Radio in just a couple of minutes.
I'm home, and I love it. I'm home, where I belong.
These days, many Americans are at risk of foreclosure and losing their homes. Making Home Affordable from the U.S. government has already helped many struggling homeowners. Go to makinghomeaffordable.gov or call 1-888-995-HOPE. The sooner you act, the better chance we can help you.
I'm home.
Brought to you by the U.S. Treasury, HUD, and the Ad Council.
This is Lisa Edelstein from House. On TV, the good doctors aren't always easy to spot, but it is easy to spot the good that Barasa Ware is doing as a local health worker in Ethiopia. Every day, he helps the children of his village survive. When you help local health workers like Barasa, you're one step away from helping children survive all over the world. See where the good goes at goodgoes.org and find out all the ways you can help the good go further. Brought to you by Save the Children and the Ad Council.
So I'm a cat, and I just moved in with this new human, and she's got this little toy she's always playing with, all day long. Tap, 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 bloop, bloop. She can't put it down. There it is. Oh, and get this. She even talks to it. Last week, she asked it for Chinese, and guess what? Egg rolls showed up, like magic. Humans have cool toys.
A person is the best thing to happen to a shelter pet. Be that person. Adopt. Brought to you by the Ad
We're open for business. The Greater Good Ministries Book and Gift Shop is now open for business, featuring metaphysical and uplifting books from your favorite authors, such as Doreen Virtue, Wayne Dyer, Michael Edward Owens. We've added handcrafted one-of-a-kind jewelry, pendants, earrings, and bracelets, and now have an exclusive selection of crystals, rocks, and stones for your metaphysical toolbox. Take a look at our hand-dug Arkansas crystals, imported Brazilian crystals, Tibetan crystals, and Reiki healing stones. All of our rocks, crystals, and stones have been Reiki infused, blessed, and cleared, ready for use. You can reserve your copy of Crystal Healing 2012 and Beyond, Reverend B's new book, A Comprehensive Guide of Rocks, Crystals, and Stones for the New Age. Visit ggmradio.com. And click Bookshop in the menu bar. That's ggmradio.com.
What do I smell?
Ooh, do you like that? It's a new aromatherapy oil I just got from Young Living. It's called Clarity, and it's really great to improve and promote mental alertness, especially if you're tired or drowsy.
Yeah, do I need that? Let me see the bottle. Wow, it's got basil, chamomile, cardamom, geranium, bergamot.
Yeah, and rosemary, lemon, ylang ylang, peppermint, jasmine. Whew, it smells divine.
Boy, I want some Clarity. Where did you get it?
I got it from Your Natural Alternatives. All you need to do is go on the internet to tinyurl.com/aromayl. That's tinyurl/aromayl. Ordering is simple, and it's delivered right to your door.
Got it. tinyurl.com/aromayl. Thanks.
Cultivate your spirituality with visionary practices of a higher nature in your own home and at your own pace. Empower You Metaphysical Academy. Yusui Reiki, Amadeus Shamanic Healing, Karuna Reiki, Celtic Reiki, and many more energy attunements and modalities available. Learn in the privacy of your own home. Attunements and energy activations offered via telephone with downloadable certifications. Very affordable, very accessible, and very interesting. Go to empoweruacademy.org. That's empoweruacademy.org. Our program is being brought to you by ShotNet Web Hosting. Reliable web hosting for everyone. Feature rich, reliable, and affordable. Create your own site in minutes with ShotNet's easy-to-use site designer. Monthly plans available that fit any budget. Visit shot-net.com. That's shot-net.com. You're listening to Greater Good Ministries Radio and Namaste Nutrition with Claudia Cleary. And now, back to the program.
Welcome back to the show. Cindy Walsh is my guest. I am Claudia Cleary, and I would like to welcome you if you are recently joining us for Namaste Nutrition. Cindy Walsh is the mom of twin boys, Eric and Robbie. They are now 10 years old. Welcome back to the show. Cindy, it's a pleasure having you here.
Thank you.
Let's talk a little bit about Mercury and autism. Can you talk a little bit about the link between the two and where Mercury can potentially come from?
Well, for example, Mercury, the symptoms of mercury poisoning and the symptoms of autism are the same. So there is possibility of someone who gets the autism diagnosis, as the diagnosis is just from behavior alone, that it could actually be mercury poisoning. But the fallacy is that when they say that there's no connection with vaccines and autism, the MMR shot has no mercury in it. It does have other genes in it. But the flu shot has a full dose of mercury. But that's not the only source you could get the mercury from. You can also get it from living, the closer you live near a coal-fired power plant, the more you get the mercury. You can also get the mercury from amalgams from your teeth. They call them, they just say fillings. If you want to get them replaced, they don't say amalgams, say fillings, because they're 50% mercury. And that every time, if you look on, I think the YouTube video is called Toxic Teeth, International Biological Dentistry, something like that. I'll have to look that up. But it's a site that has the mercury that when they tell you not to go to the dentist while you're pregnant, is because of those amalgams, because they think that that's the only way that you'll get them is when they're putting them in. But I had 12, and they were old. They were 30 years old, and I know that I was getting my mercury was from my teeth. My doctor took one look at my teeth and said you have to get those out. You can get resin fillings. Those are the white or the clear ones. Those don't have mercury in them. And your dentist, sometimes the dentists don't take precautions on themselves, but they if they're not going to take precautions on themselves, they're not going to take precautions on you. So, you know, you keep that in mind when you're getting them, because the dentist is not only hurting himself, he's not only hurting you, he's hurting himself. And he needs to keep that in mind. I mean, when they took mine out, they they put a vacuum to suck the mercury out of the air. They were all wearing gas masks like World War II. They take it seriously.
Wow.
You remember, what's that movie? What's the movie with, I can't think of it. The movie with the plant, the crazy dentist with Steve Martin, you know, that there's some truth to that. Even though they're doing it in a comedy sort of Little Shop of Horrors, they're doing it in a comedy sort of way that the dentists end up with mercury, just like the, you know, when they say the Mad Hatter disease,
right.
They made hats out of mercury.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah, absolutely, there was mercury used in hat making process many, many years ago.
Right.
So just out of curiosity, how do you think that your kids are different when they were first diagnosed compared to how they are today?
Well, for example, a new thing is that one of my sons, Eric, was third place in the spelling bee in third grade against the sixth graders. So in the whole school, he came in third place. And Robbie was also in the school spelling bee, but, you know, his word was sheer, and he spelled it with an A, E-A-R, and there's two spellings, but we didn't say anything, and it was sort of too late, but he probably could have gotten a lot farther as well. And Eric has been, lately, he's been singing and while they're waiting for dismissal, and he says that people will start going, "Go, Eric, go," and then they stop talking, and they're all listening to him sing, and he says he wants to be in the talent show this spring.
Oh, that's so sweet.
Yeah.
That's so sweet. Didn't you say that one of your boys also is very analytical and very much more mechanically inclined?
Well, yeah, Robbie, when he was a kid, he took apart, he insisted that I read him a manual for plumbing, for how a sink replacement, and you know, he was always interested in how things work, and he was taking things apart and playing with the computer and stuff like that, and the next day he put a sponge down the toilet, and then he pulled up a chair to watch us put it back together again. I think he wanted to know how the sponge worked. You know, how the toilet worked. So now that he can talk, you know, I give him shows to watch, and he can look up manuals for fun, and now he'll say, "How do you fix that, Mom?" And never mind, I'll look it up in the computer. And he knows the latest technology. He rearranged all my apps just because he thought they should be more organized. You know, he's a very much an engineer, and he was an engineer when he was autistic too. He just couldn't tell me. That's a fallacy too, that you know, sometimes that people think that autism is part of your personality, that they're going to change their personality when you recover. I don't agree with that. I think that it was always there. We're just bringing it out now.
Well,
there
sure.
There were hints of it before.
The personality of the other child, the one who is not the engineer, personality. He is more interested, you said, in like spelling and word order. I mean, is there anything else that he really enjoys doing besides spelling, or is there something else that he likes to do that's somewhat different from his brother?
Well, you know, he likes to learn how computers work too, but he likes the spelling and math was part of their hyperlexia because they could read very young, and you know, because he was always a good writer. He says because I'm writing a book, he wants to write one too, and he's been on the computer. He's been writing a book, you know, and it's sort of. It's very funny. It's hysterical because the character in it was named Robert Thompson. Because Robbie's name is Robert Thomas, so he was Thomas Robertson or something like that. But he was switching it around. It was very clever. It's really cute. He says he's going to publish a book someday. He says he's going to be a singer. He loves to sing. And that's been his latest thing is that he's trying to have enough being a little shy, and he, you know, he wants to do the talent show, but he has the talent, he can sing, and he's in chorus, so I think he's got a while to go, and then the kids are going, "Go, Eric." He said one time where they did their own little American Idol with him and another kid, and they said that he sang better, so.
Oh, wow, I'll bet that really made his day. That's wonderful.
Yeah, singing is his thing right now.
Can you talk a little bit about the book that you're working on? You have changed the title several times, I would say, over the last, well, more than several times, probably. But talk a little bit about what you're putting together to publish.
Well, I've been kept changing my mind on what to call the book. Last time I really didn't have a title, but I'm calling it Turn the Light On, Please, because that was Robbie's first words before he lost his language. You know, kind of looking at autism as a light, or as your child as a light, and the light's turned off, you know? Mm-hmm. And so we're talking about recovery from kids, you're turning on the light. And since that was the first word, I think that's sort of appropriate, because a lot of kids, when they lose their language, they start, you know, they try to talk and they try to have the words, and just people just don't understand, and they get really frustrated. You know, Robbie used to give them one chance to understand him. They didn't understand him, then that was too bad, and then they would put on his IEP that he's not talking to kids. Well, he was trying, but he just couldn't make the right sounds for people to understand him. You know, now he can, but since he's so interested in electronics and he's so good at it, he has to find somebody who will talk about what the latest app is or whatever. You know, so, yeah.
That's really, really cool. You know, we could probably talk for about the next 3 hours about some of the experiences that you've had, because you really are a very interesting person to listen to. I would like to just take this time to say thank you so much for coming onto the show, Cindy. And I also would like to reiterate that if anybody would like to contact Cindy and have questions about autism, you can always email her at twinmom4321@cox.net. That's T-W-I-N-M-O-M 4321@cox.net. If you have any questions for Cindy and you didn't either have the time or felt a little shy about coming on to either the chat room or the air with us to talk, but I would like to encourage anybody out there who has questions about autism to contact Cindy so that you can be a part of the network that she has created, so that you won't feel quite so isolated. And
well,
Cindy, I hope that you choose to come on the show again at some point with me.
Can I talk about the book a little bit more, or are we out of time?
We have maybe 1 minute, and that is about it. Just real, real brief, please.
So just to mention, one of the things I'm mentioning in the book is if you look at the Bolen Report, B-O-L-E-N, it talks about the connection with vaccines and autism, that there was a guy named Brian Hooker who had a kid on the spectrum and really looked at the studies that the CDC says don't connect vaccines and autism, and I think people should take a look at that.
So that would be a really good thing for people to check out, especially if they're concerned about where their children are. Cindy, it was a real pleasure having you on the show, and I want to thank you again. And thanks to all of our listeners today. And I look forward to seeing you next Wednesday on Namaste Nutrition on GGM Radio at Blog Talk Radio. And I would like to say thanks again to Cindy, and also a shout-out to my marvelous, intrepid producer, Amanda Dowell, who's manning the forts with me. And we will see you next week. Namaste.
Okay, thank you.
You know the bed feels warmer sleeping here alone. You know I dream in color and do the things I want. You think you got the best of me, think you've had the last laugh, bet you think that everything good is gone. Think you left me broken down, think that I'll come running back. Baby, you don't know me, cause you're dead wrong. What doesn't kill you makes you stronger. Stand a little taller, doesn't mean I'm lonely when I'm alone. What doesn't kill you makes a fighter. What's up, keep it lighter, doesn't mean I'm more.
love you. Kill your makeup.